Hello, everybody. This is Noah and John, and we are from Urban Digs. And today, Johnny, we got a good one. We are talking Manhattan, and we got Brown Harris Stevens' own Anna Khan here. She is a powerhouse, 28 years plus in the business, top one percenter. She does deals all over the place, and we got her all for ourselves for the next 15, 20 minutes, John.
Nice.
Anna, I just want to go right to the question here, and I'll say thank you right off the bat for being with us. But agents and us, everyone wants to know what is going on in the New York City markets today.
Well, first of all, Noah and John, it's an honor to be here. I've been listening and watching since day one, and I have the premium account. This is not a plug, but I swear to God, we use it every single day. I've had it since its inception. And I love to give it to my clients who are interested. It's a wonderful feature to have. The banker guys, the finance guys, they love to follow your data. And I don't know what we would do without your data. It's actually amazing that we survived before you, you know, trying to get bits and pieces here and there. As you know, our technology is improving, and so is our data, thanks to you guys. Yeah. So the market for me right now is very busy. I believe it is seasonal. I'm not saying that it's the best market in the world that I've ever seen, but have I ever been more busy? I don't know. I mean, we're always busy. You know, last spring basically didn't happen because everybody had not digested the interest rates yet. And they were just sitting on the sidelines. The sellers still had pie in the sky numbers in terms of pricing in their heads. So there was no meeting between buyer and seller in their minds. And that's the worst market for a broker. I don't care if prices are down. I don't care if prices are up. I want the buyer and the seller to be on the same page. And I truly believe that that is what's happening here. Combined with the spring market activity, which does usually happen, though I do remember the years we were in a 12-month market. When I first started, we had seasonality. Then we had a 12-month market. After COVID, we did now, it seems, go back to a seasonal market, or it feels that way right this moment. But I think a lot of it is that the inventory, of course, is low. People, there's a lot of pent-up demand. They have been sitting in their, you know, two bedrooms with three kids at their 2 and 3% interest rates. And they're just saying, we're going to go. If we find the right thing, we're going to move. I've been listing, and my buyers have been putting in offers. Every single property, no matter what segment of market, no matter where in Manhattan, you know, even in rentals, high-end rentals and lower-end rentals, we know have always been very busy. Everything has multiple bids that I've experienced. I've had to fight for my buyers to get these properties, putting in very detailed offers, you know, offering, I used to say, my firstborn child. Now it would have to be my firstborn grandchild. It's a tough environment, but it's an exciting environment. And it has some similarities and some differences from what I've seen in the past.
Right. Well, I want to dig into one of the points you made, because I thought it was really astute. And you talk about, you don't really care if the market's up, you don't really care if the market's down. You really want buyers and sellers to be on the same page. And you're kind of getting that sense right now. Last year, and for some of the extended drawdown that we've had, buyers and sellers have not been on that same page. And I'd like to look into your playbook for a second. And you, when you see when the buyers and the sellers are just sort of on completely opposite sides, and it's hard to get to the middle. I mean, this really is the core of what being a broker is. And I'm curious, you know, when you're in a market like that, how do you have conversations, you know, with your clients to try to get them to meet in the middle?
Well, I'm a big believer in listening to what's important for the client. If they say to me, I have to have this home, I figure out a way with the listing agent, if it's my buyer, or with the selling agent, if I'm bringing the buyer, how to meet in the middle. We're working very closely with our colleagues, which we've always done, but I do believe now it's even more important than ever. Now that we're in a challenging market, it's not like you open the door and you get 10 offers. I remember spreadsheets of, you know, 20 offers I would present to sellers. That's definitely not the case. And there's a lot of unqualified buyers out there also. So brokers need to be very careful to make sure that they're qualifying any offer and qualifying their buyer before they even really embark on this journey with them, because otherwise, what's the point? In terms of trying to get people to buy in the last couple of years, you know, after the COVID craze, let's say in the last year and a half, they really either needed to buy, they wanted the pied-à-terre, they were making lots of money, they wanted to be here, they wanted to live. For the families that are a little bit maybe more careful with their budget, a lot of them put up flex walls. They stayed where they were. And now the kids are bigger and it's enough already. We got to get out of here. And also the pricing is better. So they're seeing slightly better pricing. They have the need to move. And I think also very importantly, interest rates were a shock to begin with. They've really been digested. And historically, my sales, and I believe in Manhattan, it's something like 35% are all cash. I would say in my case, it's a much higher number than that. I usually reference 70%.
Wow. Right. I think that's one of the things we've seen. Sorry to interrupt. No, but you know, one of the things we've been seeing is just that the number of cash deals, especially when you get to like the luxury, the condos, it's at a much higher percent point than it's been in a long, long time. We're sort of kind of setting records up here. So it's interesting to hear you sort of, you know, echo that sentiment as well.
Yeah. It's strange to see this higher interest rate environment is not hitting Manhattan like you would think it would because of that liquidity that's out there to pay all cash. And, you know, before I go to the next question, I just want to ask you really quick for agents that have listings out there right now, I want to just stay on this market conditions for agents that have listings on the market right now. Let's say they've been on the market for 30 or 45 days. You're in the middle of the spring season. You only got a couple of months left. Do you work a price reduction strategy now, or do you wait a little bit?
I would not wait a moment. And we are going to our sellers who are still not in reality and saying, this is the time. This is what we're seeing in the market. We're seeing these multiple bids. We're seeing the buyers out in droves like I haven't seen before. I just put an apartment up on Street Easy and in the broker system an hour ago. We already got two inquiries. This is a $2.5 million co-op on the West Side. I mean, I haven't seen that before. If we got an inquiry here and there, we were happy. So definitely I would advise my sellers to either lower the price or list now and not wait, because we know at this moment, the market is excellent.
Right. And if the market's good, if the market's good, right, you would have seen some inquiries and some engagement. And if you haven't, you know, might as well take advantage of it while the market is still good, because we don't know what's going to happen in a couple months. All right. I just wanted to sneak that in. You know, a lot of agents, when they get a property, they go into sell side mode, they go into the data, they go into the comps. It's a lot of stuff, right? There's a lot of work, but you also got to think about it from the other perspective. You also got to think about, how am I going to sell this listing if it maybe isn't the most sellable, especially in a world where buyers don't really have an imagination. So what do you say to that?
Well, we are seeing very much so that if it's not beautiful, or at least beautifully presented, that it's not getting the same reaction as a property that is a beauty, a jewel. Of course, there are not all, every property is that way, but even a one bedroom or studio that faces a brick wall, there's a lot you can do. Make sure the paint color is correct. Make sure it's deep cleaned. Make sure that the tiles and the caulking in the bathroom is fresh. I do something else, which is I bring a lot of decorative, colorful items. Yesterday, we were in an estate that we just did help the owners renovate, and it looks beautiful, but it needs a full renovation, which we know is a big challenge in today's market. That's the most difficult apartment to sell. But they really listened to us. We didn't do a full staging because it would have cost, you know, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000. We used some of their pieces, cleaned everything out. And just little things like some flowers in the bathroom, yellow lemons in the kitchen. I use everything artificial because it's just easier. You don't have to be switching them all the time, and the camera can't pick it up. And when you walk into a home, you see the color. Everybody thinks they're real. I actually have them all over my office, and people always think that I have fresh flowers, but I don't. But in order to get the people to feel like they're at home, even if the property isn't perfect, windows cleaned, you know, these maybe are obvious things, but a lot of brokers, you're right, they go into that mode. They don't stage the photos. I mean, stage by moving, you know, half of the people's content to one side of the room while the photographer takes the picture. They don't roll around on the floor, you know, collecting the dust bunnies. You know, these are the things that we have to do.
Yeah, and so one of the, John, I'm going to interrupt you really quick.
Go ahead.
Otherwise, I'll forget this question. And how much does a physical staging, right? There's virtual staging, there's physical staging. How much does a physical staging cost?
So every stager is different, and I don't like to quote staging prices, and they definitely vary depending on the season and how busy the stagers are. But the excellent stagers are usually very, very busy. You can do, and again, it can vary, but a one bedroom, I would say around 15 to 25, two bedrooms, 25, 35, 40. When you get into the larger homes, it could be more, $60, $70, $100,000.
Right.
And it's all worthwhile because they definitely get the money back at the end, but not everybody has the stomach to put that money ahead of time. I know that Brown Harris and some other companies, they do have programs where they'll pay for it up front and then have the seller pay you back at closing. But I really do believe very much in the physical staging as the best thing you can do. And you mentioned virtual staging. We always, the empty apartments are the ones that need a few pieces taken out and replaced. You know, you could take out some parts of some pieces of furniture and not everything. There's incredible staging programs now. I make sure to show the property virtually staged and then the original picture as well. Because otherwise people walk in and the staging is so good now, they think that that's what the apartment actually looks like. So I like to show them side by side, but that's also a very useful tool. Also, I just learned not too long ago, Brown Harris has a new program, which you can actually download an app and you can, when you're in the apartment, look at the furnishing 360 degrees on your phone virtually.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
Thank you, Adam.
So Noah, you sort of hit on sort of the question I wanted to ask, which is, first of all, the practical aspect I think is really interesting because I think you go in and, you know, every listing is its own story. And so you kind of go in, and I'm wondering, just out of curiosity, do you have like an Excel sheet or something, like some kind of checklist where you're like, all right, I got to clean the windows, I got to do the flowers, I got to check for dust bunnies, I got to fluff the cushions. And it just like you make sure that all 5,000 things are done for every single listing on a very practical side. That's the first question.
Go ahead. You want to ask the second one?
Yeah. And then the second question is, how do you deal with the clients who've seen the virtual staging and they walk in, they're like, oh, I mean, I know I saw it. I saw these two online, but is there ever a disconnect when someone walks in and even though they know that it's virtual and even though they've seen the original versus the virtual, is there ever a disconnect? And if so, how do you deal with it?
So that's why I was saying I always put the virtually staged along with the actual photo. Side by side. So they see the living room. Okay, that's what it really looks like. This is what it can look like. Kitchen, whatever room, on and on. I make sure. And then they know that this is the apartment. I show the real photos along with the virtually staged photos. I would never want to just put virtually staged photos because that's not good for anyone. In terms of what to do to prepare an apartment the same way, I have checklists for putting a listing on the market, working with the buyer. I cannot tell you how important those checklists are, because even after doing this so many times, we always forget one little thing. So anytime we really do almost anything, I have a checklist for almost everything.
Gotcha. And I got a question. When you go on listing presentations, is there anything specific that you do, any strategy that you put forth on a listing pitch that you think you and in your mind gives you an edge?
We used to call it a pitch, right? Like we're throwing something at somebody, or hopefully nothing too horrible. Then we called it a listing presentation. I liked that a lot more. I thought it was a lot more professional. And then we started calling it a listing consultation. And now I like to say a listening consultation. And that's because we now digitally, we can send all of our marketing materials beforehand, afterwards, comps, beforehand, afterwards. I never sit down and say, this is what I can do. This is what Brown Harris can do. I just take their temperature. How are you today? You know, maybe they were referred by someone. How do you know such and such? Just human conversation. They want to tell us everything. We are so important to them. This is their biggest asset. So I really try to determine, is it that they're separating? Is it somebody's ill? Is this just they're moving to somewhere they want to live more so, but they have all this furniture they want to sell at the same time. You know, a lot of brokers don't hear that. Oh, they want to sell all their furniture. Well, I don't care about the furniture. I don't make any money on the furniture and it's a big pain in the butt. That's the most important thing to the client. So sometimes something that seems not at all, if we really listen to what's most important to them, we hear very different things. And then if they want to hear about the marketing, if they want to hear about all of that stuff that we used to come in spewing, of course, we're prepared to discuss it. But very often the hour and a half is over and we haven't discussed one thing like that. Follow up with that. So
that's really amazing. So, all right, I'm gonna dig into here because I know you've got, I don't want to do the math. It's what are we at 28 years of experience? I mean, it's up there and you've seen all kinds of markets. You've seen bad markets. You've seen good markets. You've seen amazing markets. You've seen really scary markets. And you've seen markets like this, just kind of doing its thing. So what I'd like to do is, you know, put on your thinking cap. And I'm curious if you could go back and just tell yourself one thing, what's the kind of thing that you would have liked to know, you know, a few things you would have liked to know day one of your real estate journey that you could share with some of the newer agents in the audience today?
So first, don't worry. If you do your job and you always keep your clients' best interest in mind, you're going to do great. And the markets up and down are going to happen. It's just what happens in markets and real estate. I always say that one of my best years was after 9/11. Who would have thought that that would happen? But a lot of people came to support New York. Pricing was down. Some people came because they felt New York was on sale. So even though there's scary news on the horizon very often, it doesn't mean that we're on an island here. Everybody wants to be here. People are going to buy and sell here. And if you're consistent with being kind to your fellow brokers, to your clients, consistent with your marketing, and I can talk about some of the things I do in terms of staying in touch with your sphere of influence, and you are familiar with the inventory, with the going to the open houses. In some ways, maybe if a broker is not so busy, it's a really good time to get those buyer's guides together. All the things that we don't have time to do, get, you know, your seller materials together, board interview tips. These are all the brokers. I see a lot of the newer brokers are doing amazing videos on YouTube and social media showing apartments that are not their listings. But I mean, I know their names. I recognize them, and they may be doing great. There are a number of them, but this is a good time to focus on things like that. Just getting your name out there, networking with your clientele, going to functions, getting involved in a club, you know, all the things that we don't, when the market's like this, working 7 days a week for months straight, which is what I'm doing right now, it's just not a lot of time to get things like that done.
Yeah, this is a numbers game, right? I mean, you got to kind of think about prospecting. You got to think about building your brand. You got to think about building an identity, separating you from why is someone going to work with you? What do you offer that they can't get from somebody else, right? What's your edge? Anna, what's your thoughts about working with a team?
So I started on my own. I actually worked in the beginning on my own and then with a partner for a little while. And then I worked again on my own. And then teams really took over this business, I think, in a lot of ways, became more the norm. I don't want to say took over, but they really were not the norm when I started. In fact, I don't think there were any teams. And then I got a partner and we brought on a team member, an assistant, an operations manager, a social media person. And before you knew it, we had a team. And I love it. And I think for a broker that is even doing, you know, medium well, I'm not saying they may be, you know, just want to do better. They're not doing quite as well as they'd like to do. It's a wonderful way to really learn how a very successful operation runs and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. Again, the checklists, you know, getting, you know, the photographers who come to photograph always are amazed at how much I'm moving around the furniture and the clutter and, you know, everything that it's really is.
What's amazing to me is, you know, we've had a number of really top agents on this and it's amazing how similar the approach is, right?
Really?
It's basically creating a business around being an agent and treating it like a business and growing your business, doing certain steps and following checklists and doing the things that will increase your business. It's a really interesting approach. And Anna, if I may, and we might have to cut this out, but I'll put you on the spot anyway. I'm curious what your thought is for the best deals in the city right now. I don't care about price point. I don't care about location. I'm just saying, like, what's one spot that you think represents probably the best deal in the city right now?
So the East Side, because it's a very large geographic location area. east of Third. So the east side, being a large geographic location, especially east of Third Avenue, has always been a better deal than a tiny little area like the West Village. Harlem, West Side, you could still get, I think you can really get good deals everywhere because pricing is down. I mean, relatively speaking, they're better than they've been for a long time. Interestingly, for an investment, for example, we have a listing at 25 Charles Street right now. And that listing we had rented for $3,200 a month. It's a walk-up three-bedroom in a very prime location. After COVID, we got $5,500, which was amazing. I think we're asking $4,000. We had a line around the block. You know, when everybody was renting, the rental market was so high. Right now, we put it on the market, and we already have applications for $6,500. So the reason I mention that is that the Village, if you can get something that's affordable in a really, really, really top, top, top prime location, it's only going in one direction.
Right. Yeah. The rental market's on fire right now. And Anna, are you seeing value plays in the unrenovated space? Are buyers starting to, you know, consider taking on a renovation anymore? I mean, I know they were penalizing renovations for the longest time.
So I have to say, I haven't really seen that. I haven't seen buyers who come in and say, okay, this is a great opportunity. You know, I want to renovate and sell for a higher number just because the aggravation factor is so high and the cost is so high. We are selling our unrenovated homes to people who really love them, and it's worth it for them to put the time and effort in to make it their home. In terms of people coming in and trying to quote unquote bottom feed, you know, I'm not seeing that for unrenovated space, even though it is probably 80% more difficult to sell an unrenovated space than it is to sell something renovated. But still, that's not happening. And I think it's also important to note, and I'm seeing this, that the co-op boards will not accept a low price. So we just had a situation where we had a deal at 1.9, which is an amazing deal. One of the co-op board members lived in the line, and we did the whole concessions thing. The lawyers know how to do it. The buyers were game. There were more closing costs. It was about $8,000 per side, but it was a $400,000 differential.
Wow.
And we were lucky that the board said something, because most of the time they'll just turn it down.
Right. I don't think people realize that this market has gone down. Because, you know, outside of New York City, housing markets are doing crazy things. I mean, they may be starting to roll over a little bit, but suburban markets have been going up, and New York City has been kind of not playing ball with that trend for the last 2 years, right? I've heard about these co-op board turndowns. Well, how are we going to navigate this? All right. Well, John, you got any more questions for Anna?
I mean, I could talk about co-ops versus condos all day long. I'm actually still a big fan of co-ops. I think they represent a great deal in the city, but there are some that are just a complete headache, and it's, you'd probably be better off avoiding them. But there are some that are out there that are, the board package is not that big a deal. There's definitely a savings, and it's still worth investigating.
And condo board packages, even though they don't interview and they won't turn you down, are just as cumbersome in terms of accumulating the paperwork.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's never an easy process. All right. Well, we covered a lot of stuff here. This has been great. Anacon, thank you so much. Brown Harris Stevens for joining us. That is John Walkup. I am Noah Rosenblatt. This has been Talking Manhattan, and we will catch you guys next time. Thank you, everybody.